You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the CHGO Blackhawks podcast presented by PointsBet. Use that promo code CHGO when you sign up and you'll get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. And with that $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll get that free CHGO membership, access to all of our great web content, a free t-shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker, all that stuff. $2,000 in free bets and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker for making a $50 or more first-time deposit at PointsBet. Happy Friday. I'm Jay Zawoski with Greg Boysen and Mario Tirabassi. Finally, fellas, should we check Twitter one more time?
I think we have a window we can fit it in.
We've been trying to do this show for most of this month. Duncan Keith retired on July 12th, 2022, even though it feels like
it
last
is.
Year.
Yeah, jeez.
And we have not really had the chance because of all the stuff going on with the Hawks to discuss it at length. So I'm doing one final Twitter check, guys, before we start this.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I just got a DM too. Oh, God, what's happening? Oh, God, oh, God. Okay, so far, good. All right, we're good.
No. Even though we've started and there's no news, we have recorded one of these audio-only podcasts
it's
to
true.
Get 35 minutes in and have to start over.
Start over,
so,
yes.
Thank you, Frank Saravalli.
Let's not...
Was that Richardson?
Yeah,
that was the Richardson hire.
That was
we had
Richardson.
To literally record
stop
over.
Stop and restart.
That was bizarre world because that whole second time we were recording, I'm like, did I say this already? Was this on the first show or the second show?
Yeah.
So confusing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we should be okay.
Yeah, right? I hope so.
Well, let's just make a.
He said.
No.
Yeah, we're gonna find out. So Duncan Keith retires July 12th as a member of the Edmonton Oilers.
6 years ago.
Yeah, I'm gonna recap. I spent some time preparing for today's show, and I have all of his accomplishments written down.
All right, sit back, get comfy.
2015 Conn Smythe, 4-time All-Star, 2-time Norris Trophy winner, 2010-2014, 2-time first-team NHL All-Star, 1-time second-team NHL All-Star, 3-time Stanley Cup champ, 2-time Olympic gold medalist, 1-time silver medal World Junior Championship winner in 2008. In total, 1,256 games played, 106 goals, 540 assists, 646 points, 151 playoff games with 91 points in those games. For the Blackhawks, he is number 2 in games played with 1,192. Behind Stan Mikita's 1,396. He is number 10 in points with 625. He is number 6 in assists with 520. He is number 3 in on-ice goals for 1,537 behind only Stan Mikita and Doug Wilson. Duncan Keith on the ice for 1,537 Blackhawks goals.
That's pretty good.
Did I forget anything? I don't think I did.
Yeah, I think that's quite the comprehensive
list.
Seven lost teeth.
Yeah, there you go.
thing you missed on that
At
one.
At least but, seven. Seven that we know of.
And as we have to do before every time we talk about any member of the 2010 Blackhawks, we have to issue our qualifier. We usually give the floor to Mario to do this, but I think we can all sort of just acknowledge, as we always do, what happened to Kyle Beach in 2010 is inexcusable. anyone who had any prior knowledge of this, honestly, post knowledge of this, should be held accountable for that. And we don't know what level of knowledge Duncan Keith had, but Kyle Beach said everyone knew. And last time I checked, Duncan Keith was on that team in a major role. So acknowledging the failures of that team once again, as we have to do every time we talk about these guys. And it really puts a cloud over everything. And here I go. I'm going to stop.
Well, it's not only that, you know, the being on the 2010 team and what he did or did not know or what not. It's the way that things were handled last summer and comments that he made or rather did not make. That kind of put those things, it makes the cloud kind of follow him a little bit more. We talked about with Jonathan Toews, the way that he, needed three attempts basically to say something that actually felt sincere about the situation. It's just one of those things that happens and one of those things you have to acknowledge. And I think, you know, we've touched on it enough. Preface it with, you know, no one is perfect. The next however long we talk about Duncan Keith is about the hockey player and the legacy that he leaves with the Blackhawks, but also, you know, acknowledging that it's not as sparkling and shiny as it may have looked a while ago.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. So, you know, it was weird to watch him play for the Oilers.
Very weird.
It just didn't feel right. And that's a guy who I always thought would be kind of the last guy standing just because of the way he plays, because of the way he logs minutes, because of his workout regimen. I remember like early in his career, there were stories about his like superhuman lung capacity and all the, and I never thought of all the great Blackhawks, to retire that Duncan Keith would be, because like Hossa was forced, like he had to retire because of the health condition.
Right.
Seabrook was sort of forced to retire because of not being good at hockey anymore.
Well, and his body breaking down.
Yeah. So Duncan Keith to be the first one to really just walk away. And he is the older of them, obviously, but I don't know, that it surprised me. He seemed to me like a guy who would play like well into his 40s.
I think being in Edmonton pushed that a little bit. I think if Duncan Keith had stayed in Chicago, where expectations were different, I tend to think he might still give it a go. But wanting to be closer to his family, and just the competitor in him wanting to be on a team that was going to compete for a Stanley Cup, he saw the. I'm sure he, part of his decision was, I see the writing on the walls here. It's not going to happen here anymore. Probably helped push his decision, but I feel like if he had played the way he played in this past season in Chicago, I don't think the voices would have been as loud as they were in Edmonton to say, can we get rid of this guy?
Yeah.
And that might have pushed him to be like, you know what? I don't think I have it anymore.
I think too is remember, you know, you start the season last year with Jeremy Calhoun as head coach and there was no, I don't know. I don't think he was a dick about it, but I think it was pretty clear that Keith, probably more than anybody, did not really jive with Jeremy Calhoun. And yeah. I think that played a role in him probably wanting out a little bit of Chicago. But I also think too, Mario, like you mentioned, you know, if Edmonton had a better chance to win, I also think like you go to somewhere new at the end of your career and it maybe just doesn't feel the same. And you can't like really conjure up the same emotion. You don't feel a connection to the city or to the players. That might have played a role for him too, you know, because I think, you know, Edmonton, they've got such great players that you can kind of see them like maybe just maybe when you're getting hot and making a run in the playoffs. Maybe you're right. They just kind of are what they are and they're going to fizzle out. And maybe the semifinal, maybe the conference final, but they just don't seem like they have enough, even with McDavid and Draisaitl and all those good players they have, to get over that hump.
Yeah, I think it's a little surprising he walked away. Mario kind of mentioned he's got that drive and that wanting to win, much like Jonathan Toews does. you know, he was a guy that you thought this guy could play. He could be the next Jaromir Jagr and play till he's 45 because he's in that good a shape.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little surprised, knowing the competitor that he is. But kudos to Duncan for coming to the realization to say, maybe it's not my best idea. Maybe it's got to do with you know, wanting to be closer to, around his son as his son starts to get into, mm-hmm. you know, a little older. Maybe be there to coach him if he decides to play hockey. There's no way Duncan Keith's son's not playing hockey.
Draft him now.
I'm sure he will. Yeah.
I'm sure he's already got skates and sticks and could probably whoop my ass on the ice already.
Yeah, I just checked. He's 9 years old already.
Yeah, oh, he's definitely already got scouts' attention, I'm sure. But
yeah, because he was he was a baby, I remember, in the 2013 on-ice celebration. I remember Keith had, like, a little baby with him, so, yeah.
And that's almost 10 years ago, for crying out loud. Good Lord.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kudos to him for making that decision to say, hey, you know what, it's the right time for me to step away, for whatever those reasons were, and I'm sure there are more than one. There's dozens of reasons that go into, and I'm sure it was a very, very difficult decision for a guy like Duncan Keith to make. So kudos to him for, you know, saying, hey, it's okay. You know, I've had, you list all those accomplishments. I mean, for a guy that was drafted in the second round, was the 16th defenseman taken in that draft. 15 other defensemen were taken ahead of him.
I haven't even realized that.
Including Anton Babchuk, Jay's guy, who was taken in the first round that year.
Let it play out. Let it play out.
And Jay Bomeister was one of those other defensemen.
I thought you were just about to call me Jay Bowman. No.
I don't have 50 cents to throw in the jar. Jay Bomeister was the first defenseman taken. He was taken third overall in that draft.
He's no Duncan Keith, but he had a hell of a career.
He's a good player.
No, absolutely. But then you look at Yoni Patinkin was taken fourth overall. Yeah. Jury's still out on that one. Ryan Whitney was taken fifth. So he had three defensemen in the top five. And then 12 more defensemen. Let's go through the list.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
Isn't this the Tom Brady effect? Who were all the quarterbacks taken before him?
So we got Jay Bomeister to Florida at three overall. Yoni Patinkin, fourth overall to the Flyers. Yeah. Ryan Whitney went fifth overall to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay career.
And definitely not worth that slot, though. Keith Ballard, I remember him. He went 11th overall to the Buffalo Sabres. Steve Eminger went 12th overall to the Capitals.
He hung around for a while.
A little bit. Dennis Grebshchikov from Russia. Don't know who that is. He was taken 18th overall by the Kings. Then we get our guy Anton Babchuk, 21st to the Blackhawks.
There you go.
Martin Wagner to the Dallas Stars, 26 overall.
Sure.
Nice pick. We get into the second round. Andre Nemec went 35th to the Penguins.
Okay.
43rd overall, future Chicago Blackhawks legend Trevor Daley to the Dallas Stars. That's a pretty good pick.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick.
He had a really good, no Duncan Keith, but he had a really good run for the Stars there. Matt Green, another longtime defenseman, went 44th overall.
Matt
Green. I'm thinking, I got the wrong Green in my head, don't I? Am I thinking Andy Green? Yeah. Well, Matt Green went to the Oilers at 44th. Tomas Lienhard went 45th to the Canadiens.
Sure.
Anton Kadakin to the Devils at 51st. Ah. And then we get Duncan Keith, 54th overall to the Blackhawks.
This is a good place to remind people, this is why Kyle Davidson wants multiple first-round picks.
And can we just,
it is a crapshoot.
Absolutely. And can we just say that, like, this is my obligatory shout-out to Mike Smith, who drafted Duncan Keith. I know lots of the Blackhawk fans. I know Pat Foley loves to tell us that Dale Tallon is the only guy responsible for those Stanley Cups. Mike Smith had just as much to do with it by getting guys like Duncan Keith in the second round, drafting Brent Seabrook, drafting Corey Crawford. He drafted Dustin Bufflin was a Mike Smith pick. So I know Dale Tallon is the popular guy because we all hate He Who Shall Not Be Named, but Mike Smith had a lot to do with this too, and this was one of his picks. And we mentioned all the garbage defensemen that were taken ahead of Duncan Keith. So, you know, I'm not going to say Mike Smith is a genius. Maybe he had Duncan Keith, you know, if Mike Smith was a genius, he would have taken Duncan Keith with that 21st overall pick and not Anton Babchuk. But so I'm still clamoring one day for a Throwback Thursday episode. Maybe not this off season, but one of these years we're going to do a Mike Smith retrospective
Why not?
Episode.
Look, it's a lot harder to pick a stud at number 54 than it is to pick a stud at number 1 and number 3. Wasn't exactly rocket science for Dale Tallon to make those picks. Like,
He had Patrick Kane, and then, Jonathan Toews is on the board at number 3. That's an easy pick.
Yeah.
You still have to make those picks.
And signed Marian Hossa, so he gets credit for that too, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, and what's funny though is you look back on the photos of Duncan Keith at the draft, and you can kind of see, especially where the league was at that time, why he fell so low. He looks like a child. He's tiny.
He's scrawny.
He has not filled out his frame whatsoever. And if I was a GM and I saw, like, all right, this kid's a great skater, was really good at Michigan State, but I can't make a first-round pick on it. I just can't. It's very similar to Alex DeBrincat. Like, yeah, the numbers are great, but he's tiny. He's just tiny, so...
He was like a $1.50 when he was drafted or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, he was small.
It just goes to show you how far the league has come in 20 years since that draft pick was made. When you look at Duncan Keith, and you as you just said, oh my God, he's so tiny. And then you look at a guy like Lane Hutson from this past, who literally is still a child.
Yeah.
And he got drafted, and you wanted him in the first round.
And we were all like, let's get him.
Not all of us.
Okay, sure.
After two defensemen, I was like, enough.
Let's get some forwards. That's true.
But yeah, no. So it just goes to show you that you look at a guy like Duncan Keith 20 years ago, he's too small to play in the NHL. And now, 20 years later, almost every defenseman, like when you pick a 6'4 hulking defenseman, you're like, oh, that's different. Like, the game has changed. And Duncan Keith has a big part of the reason why
they smaller defensemen.
Yeah, and then Duncan Keith led that revolution of the position of defenseman. Without Duncan Keith, Cale Makar is probably a left winger. You know,
that's true.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, he led that revolution of the puck moving defenseman that can skate through the neutral zone. He was one of those guys that led the shift from, and that's why it's so awesome that he's forever paired with Brent Seabrook, because they were the perfect combination. Yes, I know that they didn't play together all the time, but they were the perfect combo of the new modern defenseman and that stay-at-home guy that could kick your ass.
So that sets us up very nicely to play this piece of audio I pulled from Duncan Keith's retirement press conference. This is courtesy of Oilers.com or Edmonton Oilers. Whatever the website is that the Oilers own, this is where it's from.
A lot of great memories, a lot of great teammates from my time in Chicago. When I think of those teammates and the special bonds and memories that we created, one guy that sticks out to me the most is Brent Seabrook. I was fortunate to play with him for over 1,000 games as defense partners, as defense teammates. When I think of those other teammates and Patrick Sharp, Marian Hossa, Nicklas Hjalmarsson, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Corey Crawford, Dustin Byfuglien, Andrew Ladd, Christopher Stieg, Brian Campbell, the list goes on. And I think one thing that made those teams special was our passion and the fact that we cared and we wanted to be great every single night.
Keith went on to say that he thinks, and fellas, maybe you know this, that him and Brent Seabrook have the record for most games played together as a tandem. Is that true?
Really?
I don't know how you even track that.
Sounds right.
Most games.
Blackhawks record or NHL record?
I think he said NHL record.
NHL.
I mean, it's pretty rare you have two guys that play over 1,000 games together for the same organization. Right. Not to mention they play together almost all of that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it sounds right because, I mean, yeah, you think about back in the heyday, the original 6 days, you know, when you didn't have free agency and guys stayed with teams for 10, 12 years at a time. But also in those days, they were playing 45, 50, 60 games in a regular season too. So fewer games are being played. So that sounds right. I would not argue that point if he's right or wrong. If it's not the most ever, it's certainly
it's got to be up there.
It's certainly in the team photo. I mean, it's one of the most ever. And that was a special pairing. And one thing, we're talking about the early start of Duncan Keith. There's one thing I want to point out as a kind of a more traditional roadmap for a rebuilding team, especially when you look at guys like the Hawks are drafting, like a Kevin Korchinski, a Sam Renzel, drafted in the first round this year. Duncan Keith was drafted in 2002. He went back to Michigan State and then ended up finishing that year in the WHL. Then he spent two full seasons in the AHL. He didn't make his pro debut until 2005. Three full seasons of development before he even got to the NHL. And those first couple of seasons with the Blackhawks, not great. Like they were, he had some of that a little bit of that offensive flair that we knew, but there were a lot of nights where he was an adventure out there. Him and Seabrook, it took so much time. So it was probably, 2007, 2008 that Keith really started to cement himself, and then 08, 09 took that jump. So when we look at guys like Korchinski and Renzel and basically any of these guys drafted in the last couple of years and guys are going to be drafted in the next 3 or 4 years, remember that Duncan's Keith past the superstardom is far more common than the Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews path to superstardom. You got to have patience. They had patience with Duncan Keith, and it paid off into a Hall of Fame career, franchise record having career. So just food for thought when we're going through these next couple of years. Like, when's Kevin Korchinski going to play? When he's ready. That's the answer.
Mario is looking attentively at his phone. Man. What's the breaking news? What happened? Oh, God.
I am. No. I'm trying to find this. I'm trying to find this stat. And here we go.
That's something that's
I don't even know how you track that. Because if you play a shift together in a game, does that count as a game as a D part? Like, how do it's really hard to figure that out, I think.
So this is from who wrote this? This is from Yahoo Sports. Ryan Taylor says on Tuesday during his final press conference, Keith chose to remember playing 15 straight seasons with his opposite defenseman Seabrook. They are an all-time legendary tandem together, combining for 207 goals, 861 assists, and 2,306 games as Blackhawks. I think that's both of their career games combined. I don't think that technically is their career games playing together as a pair.
Okay. So give me what was the stat again? Were the goals and assists?
Keith and Seabrook combined 207 goals, 861 assists for a combined 1,068 points, and together as Blackhawks have played a combined 2,306 games. I believe that's total, not as a pair.
Got it. So okay, but I would still assume that's a record, though.
I wouldn't be surprised because they played all of their prominent years together as a pairing. I wouldn't be surprised as the fact that they would have played the most games paired together as a defensive duo. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
At the very least, they're probably the most duo together in the expansion era since 1967. I would put money on that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Hey, if you want to put money on stuff, look at that. Download that PointsBet app and use the code CHGO when you sign up. Do that right now and you'll get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. You're also, with a $50 or more first-time deposit, going to get that free CHGO membership. You'll get access to all of our great web content. I wrote about Luke Richardson and Max Domi yesterday. Greg's history piece is out. Mario's been writing like crazy lately, too. You'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making a $50 or more first-time deposit at PointsBet. Any questions on this? Email us pointsbet@allchgo.com. And we'll help you out play along with the game at home like so many were after our points bet play of the week. Justin Steele had 6 strikeouts in the Cubs game.
So close.
And they pulled him out because his defense was letting him down and he had thrown a million pitches because of it. So our play of the week did not hit, but blame the Cubs defense, not Greg. It was not Greg's fault. So send an angry letter, tom.ricketts@cubs.com. I actually don't know if that's his email. It's probably something like Tommy Boy or something at cubs.com. And take it up with them.
T-Ricks.
T-Ricks, yeah. Demand a refund. But those in-game bets, they're super fun. You place them as the game's happening. You got a big lead. You think your team's coming back? Bet it. Do it on the PointsBet app. It's time to elevate your live betting game. Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services.
As much fun as betting on sports is, it's one of the perks of being a diehard sports fan. Another perk of being a diehard sports fan is rocking some awesome gear to show the world who your favorite teams are. And right now, CHGO has teamed up with FOCO to secure your access to the best collectibles and gear around, whether it's the Blackhawks, Bears, Cubs, White Sox, Bulls. FOCO will have something for you, your kid, a friend, or a loved one. If you're looking to get some new gear, some bobbleheads, some accessories, whatever you want, FOCO has officially licensed gear for men, women, and kids with everything from swimsuits to Crocs to bobbleheads to hats. Anything you want with a Blackhawks logo on it, they're going to have it for you. So head over to FOCO.com. That's FOCO.com. And get yourself some great Chicago sports merchandise of your favorite teams. And as an added perk, we keep throwing perks at you. All CHGO listeners.
So many perks.
All the perks.
Very perky.
CHGO, I'm leaving that one alone. CHGO listeners can save 10% off all purchases by using the code CHGO. That's easy to remember at checkout. So head over to FOCO, FOCO.com. Grab your stuff. Grab yourself some stuff and things.
All right. So I know we're the audio only podcast, but I want to show you guys this today. I'm not a big memorabilia guy, but this is my greatest piece.
Great to say right after the FOCO read.
Game used Duncan Keith.
That's awesome. Wow. Nice. Signed and everything.
Yeah. My dad got this for me. I don't know where he got it. I think it was like some auction somewhere.
That's really cool.
Awesome. This is one of my prized possessions.
So it is for those not seeing it right now. It is an Easton stick. It is white or silvery?
Silver.
Silver. All right. Silver and shimmery. It's got the candy cane taping down the shaft of the stick. And signed on the blade. What year would this be? Probably around 2011, 12, 13?
You know what? I don't know. This is like one of these old Easton aluminums.
So that's
like,
early.
It doesn't seem like guys use these very often anymore.
No. I don't think does Easton even still make sticks?
I don't know. It's not aluminum. Remember. It's like the composite, but you know
the
what
composite,
I mean.
Composite, but yeah. Okay, so that's an older stick.
But if you're
that's
curious really cool. what this looks like, I will actually tweet a photo of it in the show's description here so everybody can see it. So look for the show tweet at CHGO_Blackhawks, and I'll put a picture of the Duncan Keith stick underneath it. It's very cool, and I'm going to go chuck it aside. So I can continue to do the show.
Good solid sound.
Get some ASMR in there. So I guess the conversation now goes to kind of where it always goes, is where is Duncan Keith's place in Blackhawks history? First, probably amongst defensemen, and second, probably all time. And I've never seen Pierre Plott play. So I can't just flat out say that Duncan Keith is better than Pierre Plott. All I can do is look at the accomplishments, look at the career, look at everything Duncan Keith has done, and I feel pretty comfortable calling Duncan Keith the best defenseman in Blackhawks history. Again, I'm sure there are some old-timers that will take issue with it, but cups matter. Like, isn't that the tiebreaker, right? If you're up against it and you say, I don't really know which guy to give it to, you know, Pierre Plott's got one, but he doesn't have three.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to compare eras, especially in hockey. Pierre Plott, great player, awesome guy, one of the greatest of all time as far as Blackhawks go. But, man, you can't compare playing in 1961 to playing in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different sport. Totally different sport. Totally different type of player. Duncan Keith's speed alone. Now granted, Pierre Plott didn't have to be as fast as Duncan Keith because he didn't have to deal with speed on the other side like that, but it's so hard. I would comfortably as well say that Duncan Keith is the greatest Blackhawks defensemen of all time. I mean, to me, it's Duncan Keith, then Doug Wilson, then Pierre Palat. But that's just my personal rankings. I was always a big fan of Doug Wilson. So to me, it's Duncan Keith, then Doug Wilson, as far as Blackhawks go.
Yeah, I think you look at just where he stands statistically, most games played as a defenseman for the Blackhawks, you know, second all-time, obviously, behind Stan Mikita. I believe he's second in points all-time as a defenseman behind Doug Wilson. I mean, it's just the longevity of his career all with Chicago. I think the individual accolades, the Stanley Cups, you know, the Conn Smythe in 2015, so well deserved, because you look at 2010, 2013, Taze in 2010, Kane in 2013, those Conn Smythe awards, you could look at those and be like, could maybe someone else be in there? Especially 2013, I thought Corey Crawford had an amazing chance he had an amazing case to be the Conn Smythe winner in 2013, but Patrick Kane ultimately getting the award. But in 2015, it was the Blackhawks don't win that Stanley Cup, don't go on that run without Duncan Keith being the player that he was. And I think, you know, having at that stage of his career on that stage of the game in the Stanley Cup playoffs and Stanley Cup finals, to be able to put in that kind of effort, playing basically, 31, 32 minutes a night, mm-hmm. Just kind of cementing that legacy. I would be very comfortable saying that as far as all-time defensemen, Duncan Keith is probably number one for me.
I'm surprised you – this is a different conversation for a different day probably, Greg, but you have Doug Wilson over Chelios.
I do, because Wilson was here longer, I think, and it just, you know, he was the first Blackhawk to win a Norris Trophy. He had that offensive ability. So did Chelios. But I don't know. To me, Wilson was a better all-around player. No shade to Chelly. I mean, he's one of my all-time favorite players, too. But and maybe it's the hair. Us guys with great hair got to stick together.
The hair helmet. Doug Wilson did not need one.
Doug Wilson. No. Doug Wilson's hair should have its own plaque in the Hall of Fame. It should be Doug Wilson the player and Doug Wilson the hair.
Well, there are rumors that someday you might be able to do that and just take it off and put it right on the bust. And
there you go. Let's do it.
That would be good.
I mean, that does sound like another fun topic. Build our Mount Rushmores for each position. You know, it's a great debate to have. But yeah, I just, for whatever reason, Doug Wilson always stuck out to me a little bit better than Chelios. You know, just because he was faster, a little more creative. And where Chelios would just, you know, if Chelios had enough of you, he'd just punch you in the mouth and move on. So, which is, you know, I kind of compare, like, a great comparison would be like if you had Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook together, would have been like if you had a pairing of Doug Wilson and Chris Chelios together. Kind of similar attributes to those pairings. I don't know if Wilson and Chelios ever were.
I always think played together. I always think of Chelios and Suter, and Chelios and Carney played together a lot too.
Yeah,
but Chelios and Suter
Was already what year did the Hawks get Chelios? Well, they were teammates for a couple of seasons, but I don't think they ever played together.
Is that right? That seems almost impossible. Chelios' first year in Chicago was 1990-91,
and then. Mm-hmm.
And let me see.
So one season, because the next year, 92 was the Sharks. So two seasons here.
Yeah, Wilson was on that team too. Yep. Yep.
So, and I don't know if, I don't remember them ever being a pairing together, but then again, I was 12 and my memories.
What's wrong with you?
I've lost a lot of brain cells between now and then, so I don't recall.
I just remember, like, in the really lean years of Chelios and Suter being number one and two in scoring on the team.
Which is not good.
And if Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews somehow are gone before the season begins, you could very easily see Seth Jones being this team's leading scorer.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing.
He still might be. Like, if he assists on every single one of Patrick Kane's goals, he's got a shot at it.
He's going to play 40 minutes a night.
Because he owes us 13 power play goals this season.
Yeah, or he's overdue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that I go to with looking at different eras and whatnot is point shares, which are you know, an era excluding stat. So a quick little indicator here for those that don't know, point shares is hockey's equivalent to baseball's win shares metric. It aims to measure individual players' contribution to team success toward their team's total points in the regular season standings.
Okay.
That makes sense. So for the Blackhawks' all-time point shares list, the top five are Tony Esposito, Stan Mikita, Bobby Hall, Patrick Kane, Glenn Hall. Obviously, goalies are weighted much more in point shares. But number six at 113 is Duncan Keith. Behind him, Doug Wilson, Jonathan Toews, Corey Crawford, Brent Seabrook round out the total point shares in Blackhawks history. For defensive point shares, the top of the list is Duncan Keith at 70.
Wow.
Number two is Brent Seabrook at 56.5. Damn, so there's a 13.5 point share gap between number one and two between Keith and Seabrook. Pierre Palat, number five at 51.1.
That's something. And now I'm looking at the same thing you are, and to Greg's point, looking at offensive point shares, the only defenseman on that list is Doug Wilson, number seven at 53.6, right ahead of Tony Amani at 49.3. So
yeah,
that's an interesting argument. Look, Doug Wilson's awesome. I'm gonna take anything away from the guy, but just I always assume like Chelios is two or three in most people's minds, with Keith one, Palat two or three, Chelios two or three, and then Doug Wilson. But there's certainly an argument to be made there. That's for damn sure.
Chelios did more of those things that showed up on the news reels, you know, the highlight packages, the big hits, the big goals in overtime, you know, stuff like that, where Wilson was kind of like Keith to a degree, where he just went about his business and played the best hockey every night, and you kind of took it for granted how good he was. And I think that could be said for Duncan Keith too. We kind of took for granted how good he was because he just did it.
That's such a great point, because for so many years, you didn't even talk about Duncan Keith because you just knew he was going to be great. So it wasn't even like you'd start talking about the playoffs, right? Like, oh, like can Patrick Kane, you know, score against Anze Kopitar's line? Like, how's that going to look? Duncan Keith was so good and so dependable that his name like rarely came up in conversation, because you just knew that whatever happened, he was going to be the best defenseman on the ice for either team every night. And it was just a given. It was just a given. Yeah. And
it
you
was
can count
never on, a question mark.
Yeah. And you know, you can count, as we were talking earlier about, you know, the fact that he didn't play as long as maybe we expected, as we've been kind of talking here, I've been thinking about that, and maybe because speed was such a big part of his game that losing a step or two hurts him more than it hurts 40-year-old Chris Chelios or 40-year-old Jaromir Jagr, or like we talk a lot about Patrick Kane, like Scott Wheeler was saying yesterday, using your speed selectively, right, as a forward. Like, you don't have to just be guns blazing all the time, but being elusive is more important than being fast. Keith was so speed-based. I mean, look, he was smarter than everybody. He had more endurance than everybody. He was great. And, of course, he was one of the best skaters in the game. So he had all of that going for him. But when the skating thing started to slip a little bit, that's when you saw Keith become pretty ordinary. And, if anything, kind of not great. So yeah. I'll bet that played a role, because I think we saw a little bit of that, too, with Seabrook, who is never known for his speed. But when that step goes, your brain wants to get you somewhere, but your body can't do it anymore. Yeah. And that calculus, the mental calculus that has to go on to, you know, I'm imagining like the math factors like in front of my face, right? Like the famous GIF.
Yeah.
Like you say, it takes me this long to get here, but your body is telling you something otherwise. And that's got to be a frustrating place for a player to be, who's working just as hard as always and trains just as hard, same diet and everything, but the body's just failing them. And that's really got to be the toughest thing for an athlete of that level to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, when Duncan Keith was at his prime, you know, he was one of the best skaters, not only on the team, but in the league.
Yeah.
Just mobility, speed, just the way that he could use that to neutralize any opponent. In his prime, Duncan Keith could probably line up with Connor McDavid and defend him pretty well. Unfortunately, most times that Connor McDavid went against Duncan Keith was after his prime. There were times where he was turned around by guys like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a hard adjustment when you one of your best tools in your tool belt is no longer there. You have to make up for it, and I think a lot of times Duncan Keith still tried to rely on that speed and that mobility to be the biggest part of his game, and it ended up not working out, and you know, you started to look and see like, okay, he definitely has lost a step, and some of those things that he used to do, he wasn't beating guys to pucks, wasn't you know getting in the positions he used to be to be effective. And it's what's crazy to me is that if he wanted to play, I think they're out of the 32 teams in the NHL, he would have a spot on a lot of those teams. But I just think it comes down to his own personal expectations of what he can do. I don't think he would want to just be like, oh, I'll just be a third pairing guy, maybe play a little bit of power play as a second power play guy. It's too competitive, too proud in his abilities, too proud in his game to just be a sixth or seventh defenseman. But if he wanted it, he would have a spot on an NHL roster this season and probably even next season too. But yeah, I think he realized that everything he wants, which is to be competitive, be a prominent player, and probably also be close to home, it doesn't seem like those boxes are going to be checked for him, and that's why he was coming to the decision that it was time to hang it up.
Yeah, and when you talk about the competitiveness, I think that's where some of us feel like it is an actual consideration that Jonathan Toews might just call it a career after this year. Because I don't think he's interested in going to some other city and being their third line center. It just doesn't seem like the kind of thing Jonathan Toews is interested in being or wanting to do. So we've got a lot of time to talk about Jonathan Toews. But I just, when you said that too competitive thing, that's a lot of those guys. And that's what Duncan Keith said in his retirement.
The high standards, the high self standards. It's those guys, it's hard to sometimes be like, you know what, I guess my role is reduced, and it's hard to accept at that point.
I guarantee you when Jonathan Toews starts to seriously contemplate whether he's going to play another year or hang up his skates, he's going to have a very long phone call with Duncan Keith. And Duncan Keith, they're probably going to talk about a lot of these same things if they haven't had that conversation already. Maybe right. Duncan Keith called Jonathan Toews to have that. But I guarantee you those conversations, had they not happened already, they're going to happen when Toews gets to that point where he seriously thinks about, hey, what's in it left for me here? So two guys who are cut from the same cloth, you know, as far as competitiveness and desire and training, both of those guys are just two of the best to ever do, like, the complete, I mean, they're hockey robots for crying out loud. So I guarantee those two guys have had chats already and will have some more about, now that they're at the end of their playing days, what's next and how do I know it's the right time.
And those standards are influenced not only by their personal ability, but also their environment. I mean, Toews and Keith have been winners basically their entire careers. I know Keith was around in Chicago before Toews and the Toews and Kane era started, but you know, they've been winners in Chicago, three-time Stanley Cup champions. As you mentioned, Jay, in Keith's resume of accomplishments, two-time gold medalists at for Team Canada at the Winter Olympics, probably may have had an opportunity for three in 2018 if the NHL players had gone. So it's the culture that they expect to play in is competitive and winning, and when you don't have that, it makes decisions harder. So yeah, I think we, like you said, we can get into Toews all the rest of the summer if we want to, but it's definitely a consideration.
So I guess now that we have, you know, placed Duncan Keith in the pantheon of Hawks defensemen, we sort of have to look at him among Blackhawks of all time. And I know the Mount Rushmore thing is completely overdone, but it's a really nice way to kind of state who are the iconic four for the franchise. And I'm having trouble coming up with four that does not include him.
I feel like every time I do this, I have a different four. It's so hard.
It is very difficult. And it's, you know, so the certainties are Makita and Kane, right? Mm-hmm. They're up there for sure. So you need two other slots for Hull, Taves, and Keith.
Yeah, and listen, and we
Esposito, or you know, it's your preference, you know, what did they mean to you, or Hall or Palat or
Mario, as you look at when you pulled up the Blackhawks franchise leader page on Hockey Reference, I just challenge everybody, Google Blackhawks franchise leaders, look at that Hockey Reference page. Tony Esposito is at or near the top of all of those. So yeah, I think you're right. I think excluding him is difficult. So I think the way to do it is you build your line, right? Like you just have to have three forwards, two defensemen, and a goalie. So it's not really a mountain as much as a lineup. And whatever it is, Duncan Keith is D1 for me. There's no doubt that he's on that list. And I don't know. It's just really hard for me to find an argument against him being the best in franchise history, like you both said.
Yeah, it's hard to take him off that Mount Rushmore type thing, top four. I mean, I know we don't like to celebrate Bobby Hull as a person because he's not a good person.
Renowned puttwack.
Yeah, we don't need to get into the reasons why. If you don't know by now, you know, you need to do a quick Google. But if we're doing hockey players, what they accomplished on the ice, Bobby Hull has to be there. I mean, you can't deny that he was one of the greatest players of all time, not only just in this franchise, but in the league. He accomplished things nobody else did at that time, and he helped revolutionize the game with Stan Mikita. So, you know, it comes down to who gets that fourth spot. It's Mikita, Hull, Kane. So you can make an argument for Taves. You can make an argument for Keith. You can make an argument for Tony Esposito. You can make an argument for Doug Wilson, Chris Chow. I mean, there's so many. When you got a team that's as long as, you know, as storied and has so many great players, the Hawks, it's tough to do. So that's why I suggested we do a Mount Rushmore per position. And then maybe let our great CHGO listeners then vote on, like, what their favorite, who would they put in there. Or maybe we expand Mount Rushmore to five positions on a hockey lineup. You know, you got to have, or I actually would have to have six. We can't forget about the goalie. So I don't know, but I think we should do one for each position, and that'd be a lot of fun discussion.
I agree. The other thing too, the other way to do it is who gets a statue from this era?
No, God.
Everybody.
Right. So
just put the whole bench.
Taves, Kane, Keith and Seabrook, is that like one statue? I don't know.
Oh my God.
I'm very glad I'm not the person who has to decide this stuff.
Yeah.
Have you seen the statue they have in Toronto where it's like an actual bench?
Yeah.
And they add like another player every couple of years to like one guy's hopping over the boards, one guy's sitting on the bench. Like they add to that. I would love to see something like that. It's really
Legends,
cool.
Legends Row or something. I think it's called.
Yeah. That's very cool.
That's pretty cool.
Like, so I think what you have to do for that is you kind of have to do like one big thing for like the Cup era teams where you have one like collage or group like that, like a line photo or something like that. But yeah, Keith Seabrook deserves statues. Kane and Tave deserve statues. Marian Hossa deserves a statue. Yeah.
I feel like the seven guys that were there for all three Cups should be immortalized in
like some way.
I like that idea sculpture. of the bench with guy, and then you could add to that throughout history. You need an original idea. They do have the statue on Madison of like
the legends.
Bill Wirtz pettiness doesn't actually. The players modeled on the thing are not actual Blackhawks. They're just like random.
They're just they're like someone
AI created hockey players, kind of.
Bargain bin statue shopping.
Yeah, this guy sort of looks like Bobby Hull, but Bill Wirtz never put Bobby Hull
on
a statue.
He's a white guy on skates. Throw him on the statue.
Yeah, right. Go look at if you haven't looked closely at that statue, none of those people are actual Blackhawks. It's very, very strange. So Anyway, we've solved nothing. Way to go, everybody. Awesome. We did it.
That's what we're here for.
Before Mario tells you what you need, one more cool thing I noticed this morning. The Rockford IceHogs tweeted a video of their new digs. They moved into a new office. Seemingly, Greg, you know better than I do. Mario, you know better than I do, too. Seemingly across the street from the BMO Center. Now that the Hawks have full control of the Rockford IceHogs organization, they have opened state-of-the-art offices and work centers, and they've got a big atrium with wide-open cubicle spaces and couches and all the latest technology. So, you know, that's the Blackhawks, you know, we keep seeing people pop into the chat saying, Hawks are cheap, Hawks are cheap. The Hawks are funding the, you know, re-establishment of offices in their major, in their minor league facilities. And they're committing to that.
And the arena,
they're,
too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, arena renovations. It's a big investment into the IceHogs, which is great to see, because that's a community that loves that team.
And they needed it desperately.
And they needed it. And you know, it's especially now going into a rebuild, and where the next few years, those Rockford teams are going to be very important. It's good to see that they are giving them some tools and resources to kind of build up that winning culture, or that, you know, moving into a new era kind of culture with their minor league system, and give those young players a taste of a bigger taste of hockey before eventually moving on to the NHL level. I think that's something that's really important, and you know, it's good to see that they're getting getting some great office space to work in, kind of more of an IceHogs headquarters. That's good.
Yeah, those are the perks.
They deserve it. They need it. If you're serious about development, you've gotta invest in the IceHogs. Now, my only wish, as with all these great improvements that they're getting, an actual press box and some Wi-Fi that works. That shouldn't be too hard to ask for.
That should be handled soon, hopefully.
Yeah, we tried to do a good job of you two, more than me, letting the Hawks PR staff know, like, you know, we'd love to do a show from there, but the Wi-Fi is horrible. So I don't know if we could. I don't know if we can do that. So hopefully they said, oh, well, that's maybe something we can fix pretty simply.
As long as they get the arena done by not the same company that our office is getting done by. but
very quick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
we'll be there sometimes between March and September. Don't leave. Yeah. Well, it got better. It's been better this week.
It has been better.
Knock on composite hockey sticks. It will maintain. All right, tell us what we need so we can begin our weekend, Mario.
Yeah, you guys need some Owen, don't you?
Yep.
Don't you all need some Owen? Spelled O-W-Y-N, standing for only what you need. Owen, if you don't know, is a 100% plant-based protein shake that gives you nutrition that works just as hard as you do. All of their products are free of artificial ingredients. They are allergen-friendly. They don't contain any gluten or dairy and are easily digestible. You may have heard about Owen from Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, who follows a plant-based diet. I'm sure Justin's breaking out the Owen as Bears training camp is getting underway. Right now, Owen and CHGO are partnering up to give you an awesome offer. You can get 20% off of your first purchase at liveowen.com when you use the promo code CHGO20. That's 20% off of your first purchase when you use the promo code CHGO20 at liveowen.com. So join Justin Fields. Try Owen, O-W-I-N, only what you need.
All right, before we wrap up, I did do one final check of Twitter and my email. No Blackhawks news broke. Fellas, we made it from start to finish. We got our Duncan Keith episode done.
Let's go.
Thank you, Blackhawks.
So, everybody, have a great, safe weekend. If you're going to Lala, travel safe. Be safe. Don't take things where you don't know where they came from. Be with a friend. Walk with people. Be smart. Be safe. Remember, next week we are expecting a conversation with Calvin DeHaan, which should be a lot of fun. And we've always got Blackhawks news breaking around the clock, so we'll be all over it next week.
Ian Kennedy next week, right?
Yes, Ian Kennedy as well.
I don't know if that's confirmed for next week.
Okay.
We are going to have him at some point.
He's a little busy.
Maybe once Hockey Canada stops doing gross things, we'll have more time to talk to him.
All right, we'll talk to
Ian. He's on the agenda.
So we'll talk to Ian Kennedy when the rebuild is over.
Yeah, exactly. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. We appreciate the support. Remember to follow us on social media at @CHGO_Blackhawks. Follow Greg at Greg Boyson, Mario at Mario _Tirabassi. I'm at Jay Zawoski. Make sure you have liked our YouTube page. Make sure you like the CHGO Sports Facebook. Anything else I'm missing? No, that's everything. All right. Have a great weekend. We love you. We miss you. Be safe. We'll talk to you Monday on the CHGO Blackhawks podcast.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Ulmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team. We'll talk about your least favorite team and everybody in between. And we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.